I'm Julianne DeLynn Hatton, and you're listening to Faith and Reason on the Mormon Faircast. This series will discuss the prophet Joseph Smith and the authenticity of the gospel he restored. I'll be speaking with Michael R. Ash, author of the book of Faith and Reason, 80 Evidences Supporting the Prophet Joseph Smith. Hello, Michael Ash.
Hello, Julianne. How are you?
Fine. Welcome to Faith and Reason.
Thank you.
Let's begin our series by giving listeners some background on your book.
My book is officially titled of Faith and Reason, 80 Evidences Supporting the Prophet Joseph Smith. And little bit of background, real brief background on it. I actually initially planned on entitling this Joseph Smith's Greatest Hits. And the publisher suggested this title.
Is that right?
And I thought it was a good suggestion. You know, so it faith and reason go hand in hand in the gospel, and I mean, not just in Latter-day Saint belief. You know, Augustine, back in, you know, very famous Christian philosopher from 4th and early 5th century, he wrote a lot about faith and reason as well. So it's been part of Christian history for, you know, hundreds of years.
What part does faith play in our search for truth?
When it comes to spiritual truths, you cannot know that God exists, that Jesus is the Christ, or that Joseph Smith was a prophet, or that President Monson is a current prophet, or Book of Mormon's true. You cannot know any of those things without faith. Ultimately, faith has to make that leap, make that connection.
How does one increase their faith?
It's a matter of drawing closer to the Lord. You know, we believe that Heavenly Father is our Father, and we have to increase and improve our relationship with Him. And that's a matter of continuous prayer, of obedience, of trying our best. You know what I mean? We're all going to obviously stumble and fail at points, but if we do what we can to draw closer to the Lord, that makes that connection stronger, and I think will increase our faith.
Why isn't it enough to simply have faith then?
You know, for some people it seems to be, but for a lot of people, and especially in these times, it's not enough, because there's more to our existence than just faith. The Lord said in Doctrine and Covenants 88, section 88, verse 118, he said that we are to seek learning even by study and also by faith. He expects us to use our brains. He doesn't expect us just to go on blind faith. He gave us our brains for a reason and expects us to use it. And like I said, there's a history of this, not just in our church, but in religion in general, in Christianity, in Jesus' time, in Old Testament times, and so forth, that the Lord expects us to do studying out in our minds. I mean, it's kind of like Oliver Cowdery was told by Joseph Smith when he tried to translate, is that you have to study it out in your mind first and then come to Him. So He wants us to work for it, because in the end, the whole purpose is to become like Him. And in order to become like Him, we have to go through this process of conversion, and that requires both study and faith.
So you're pretty much saying it's okay to question then.
Sure. Yeah, without questions, we can't learn. You know, Joseph Smith, he questioned, and that's what brought him to the Grove of Trees where he received his first vision. Because of Emma, he questioned some of the practices of smoking and alcohol and stuff, and that led to the Word of Wisdom. Joseph Smith questioned many of the things that he was reading in the Bible, and that's what brought forth the Joseph Smith translation, the Book of Moses, and you know, maybe sparked some interest in things that eventually led to the Book of Abraham as well. So it was through questioning that he was able to receive revelation. That's the same with us. We have to question in order to receive revelation.
If you had a friend that was struggling and you had a friend that was questioning, what would you tell them?
Yeah, there's nothing sinful about questioning. Like I said, it's part of the process. It's just that we have to question to find answers, not just for, you know, throwing out questions that figure aren't ever going to be resolved. It has to be a purpose for a question that we want to somehow better ourselves. And we have to actually be seeking answers, I guess, is my point on this. Some things, like I said, can't be answered through reason alone. So if we question God and we keep throwing out these questions to it without actually trying to find an answer, then we're just kind of spinning our wheels.
So, Mike, have you ever struggled with questions of faith yourself?
Sure. Yeah, I think most people have. And there was a time in my life in the early 80s where I struggled quite a bit more. And I had read some things that challenged my faith, and it made me wonder if I was on the right track. And then I found some the answers to those questions, basically. But I think throughout our lives, there's different things that pop up here and there that make your question. And sometimes those questions are on things that are kind of maybe peripheral to our faith, question about things that we believe that we find are actually folklore and tradition, and mm-hmm. it's okay to reject those. In fact, we should move past the things that are not actually doctrine.
So you're a busy guy. You're not a professor who gets paid to do research and write books. Why did you think it was important to write this book?
There's some exciting things out there that I discovered through my own studies and through my own faith crisis that bolstered my faith. And there's a lot of scholarship out there that helps support belief. And I wanted to share this information with everybody else and make it accessible. So it was really, I guess, the excitement of what I had read myself and wanting to share it.
So what types of things are contained in the book? Give us a little tease before we start getting into the evidences.
Okay. I try to break it down into areas that cover about the Book of Mormon and Book of Abraham and doctrine are kind of the main areas that I hit, and also a little bit about Joseph Smith. But there's research that shows that, especially in First Nephi, the Lehites travel through the Arabian Peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
So much of the stuff that we read about that they discussed and that they came across, the way they handled things, tie perfectly into what we now know Near Eastern cultures would have done and how they would have responded under those same conditions. And in fact, even as far as finding the right place names and the directions and trails, things that Joseph Smith couldn't have known about. And it's not just piece of evidence here or there, these pieces that tie together that really make it exciting. And then names and things that we read even when they came over to the New World and the way that they handled documents, metal plates and the olive culture that we read in Jacob. So there's just so many things that we have evidence now that shows that there really are old world, whether it's Near East or Mesoamerican, ways that they lived and culture and the way that they reacted to their environment, that this book rings true.
So where did most of your research come from?
A lot of it came from in fact, a big portion of it came from LDS scholars that have written on it in different places. Hugh Nibley, he was the first one that I read about, and he wrote tons of stuff. And most members are familiar with Hugh Nibley, but a lot of members haven't read Hugh Nibley. And he was kind of the patron saint of what used to be called FARMS. It's the Neil A. Maxwell Institute. And they've produced a lot of material over the years. And there's so much of it out there, and I've read all of the stuff that I wanted to make it accessible to just kind of the average reader that maybe hasn't either doesn't want to spend the time or the depth to read some of these studies or is unfamiliar with them.
So you're putting it all in one place for someone who doesn't, say, have time to research this.
Right, exactly. And I wanted to make it in little short segments, almost, I don't know if you've ever seen these books called the Bathroom Readers. There's you can find them at Costco and mm-hmm. places. They take little sections of details and weave it together. And that's kind of what I want to do in this, is that I want to take all these wonderful things that we know that support Joseph Smith and put them into relatively small chapters and sections so somebody could digest it easily and learn about the things that I found exciting.
Why do you believe that most people are unfamiliar with LDS scholarship, especially current LDS scholarship?
I think that maybe it's a matter of intimidation, partially, because scholarship sounds like you're going back to school and doing a lot of homework, you know, and it, you know, people have busy lives, and you get home from work and you're looking for a little bit of relaxation and kind of entertainment. And I think that intimidation is part of it. And I think another part of it is that many members aren't really familiar with what's going on out there in LDS scholarship. And so my book tries to highlight that, and maybe it'll reach some people that kind of sparks their interest, and they'll go out and dig deeper like I did.
Well, your book is very well researched, but at the same time, it's very conversational, very readable, with a lot of new and interesting research. What would you say is the most interesting thing you discovered as you were putting this book together?
I would say, for me, one of the things that sticks out most is the location of a place called Nahom, which in the Book of Mormon, N-A-H-O-M, we read about how, like the Lehites were traveling, and which would now we know would have been probably the frankincense trail that Joseph Smith could have known was actually in existence at the time. And they came to a place that was called Nahom, and through most of their travels, the Lehites named the places that they went along. But when here they came to this place, it was called Nahom. And Ishmael, who was traveling with them, he died, and he was buried at this place that was called Nahom. Well, that was just kind of like any other maybe fictional story for most of the history of the church. But then all of a sudden, these non-LDS archaeologists, German archaeologists, I believe initially, they found inscriptions of a tribal group that lived there with the letters NHM. Now, they didn't have vowels in the ancient Hebrew, so this would have been pronounced as Nahom. And it's a burial place. It's a burial place where anybody could bury their dead, and it was around actual location when Lehi would travel through there. And what makes this even more fascinating is that the Lehites, when they buried Ishmael in the home, then they went eastward to what ended up being Bountiful. Well, right at Nahom is where this trail takes the eastward turn and leads to an area that matches all the descriptions of Bountiful. So it's not just one piece of evidence, but it's all these evidences that interconnect together that make for powerful supporting evidence of the Book of Mormon scholarship. And LDS scholars, I should point out, they didn't just invent the stuff on their own. They draw from their disciplines, from scholarship even produced by non-Latter-day Saints, and then apply it to the Book of Mormon to show how it ties together with real ancient world studies.
And so how do you keep a finger on all of this research? How are you able to keep up with this?
It's just a matter of reading all the time. I get up at 3:45 in the morning every morning, and after I go to the gym, I come home and I either read or write. And to me, I just can't get enough of it. I love to learn, and I'm always looking for new studies to enlighten me. And many times that changes my mind on previous things that I had supposed or assumed in the past. But I always find nowadays that it strengthens my faith.
Where can we find the Book of Faith and Reason, 80 Evidences Supporting the Prophet Joseph Smith?
It's available several places. My favorite place to make the purchase would be from the fairmormon.org bookstore. I try to support Fair Mormon nonprofit, you know, organization that helps with these struggling issues. But it's also available at Deseret Book. It's available on Amazon. So people should have access wherever they want to find it.
Thank you, Michael Ash.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Faith and Reason on the Mormon Faircast. I'm your host, Julianne DeLynn Hatton, inviting you to keep the faith.
Michael R. Ash is the author of the book Shaken Faith Syndrome, Strengthening One's Testimony in the Face of Criticism and Doubt, as well as the book of Faith and Reason, 80 Evidences Supporting the Prophet Joseph Smith. Faith and Reason is produced by Tom Hatton with music courtesy of Arthur Hatton. The opinions expressed in this podcast are not necessarily the views of Fair Mormon or The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. You can support this podcast by subscribing to it in iTunes and by rating it and writing a review. Questions or comments can be sent to podcast@fairmormon.org, or you may join the conversation at fairblog.org.